Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all the listeners of the Good Anime Palette Podcast. We are on episode 80, and we are doing the fifth iteration of the anime series adaptation process. Primer. It's the fifth iteration of the ACP, and we're going to be going over some pretty damn good manga series that are touted to be getting adaptations this year. Hopefully this year. Some of them are confirmed to be coming out in April, some maybe later on this year, but generally, these are anime series adaptations that you should be looking forward to in the year of 2024. It's still me, Will, and still Jason. Jason, are you primed and ready to go into some manga today?
I think ASAP has always, over time, been kind of a highlight for both of us, as well as I think a lot of people are very receptive of it. And I think this one is a lot of meat on the bones, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So let's just cut straight to the chase. We've got four manga series that we're going to be going over. We're not going to just be naming them straight off the bat. We're going to be going over them in the order of the docket. So that way we don't just do the big reveal. We're just going to be going in-depth per series as the episode unfolds.
Actually, do you like the order that we're going in the docket, or do you
want to... I honestly don't. Mine, yeah, no, this is fine. Okay. I think that, like, we really shouldn't, like, put too much thought into, like, how to order which ones. It's more just, like, whatever comes up, we give our thoughts, and then we just roll with it.
Fair enough.
So the first one we're going to be going into, wow, this is the fastest that we've gone straight into an actual discussion.
Well, then let's talk about preambles, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, no.
No, just, no.
No, because these we manga series are, some of them are amazing.
We need time. Okay.
So the first one right off the bat is Quality Assurance in Another World. It's so the manga was done by Masamichi Sato, who did the story and the art. It was originally published in English in Comic Days and then published in English digitally by Kodansha USA as of 2021, June 29, and in print since April 4th, 2023. The current manga score is a flat 7, with its popularity very, very low at 16,265. So it doesn't make for, you know, good signs as to whether this will be a good adaptation, but that's not what we're trying to focus on, because of the fact that it is going to be getting an adaptation. So the scores and stuff shouldn't really matter all too much. It probably already did enough to be able to convince studios to go ahead and produce it. So to give some general info as to how the adaptation is going to be handled, it'll be coming out in summer of 2024, slated to be July, though no official date is confirmed, produced by Studio Palette, not affiliated with us, at 100 Studio. So some of the previous works of Studio Palette is Kamikatsu, Working for God in a Godless World, which came out last year in spring, and the world's finest assassin gets reincarnated in another world as an aristocrat season 1, which came out in spring 2021, though that was a co-production with Silverlink.
So at the very least, they have repertoire. I think the also something to mention is I think 100 Studio is either like a subsidiary of Studio Palette, because they don't really have a lot on the docket, or they're kind of like support studio. But this one is, I guess, more of a co-production role with Studio Palette. So it's like more responsibility and more accolades, if you will. The other thing I want to mention is all these stats have actually increased since last I updated it, which I updated this morning as of recording. So it's kind of good that the points jumped up a bit due to, I guess, always with these cases, anime adaptation.
Once there's enough like interest because a trailer or a teaser drops, then people are like, ooh, this kind of looks cool. Maybe we'll be a little more invested in it. And then therefore the manga reader's like, oh, actually we're onto something. Why don't we give it a higher score? That's just generally how it works.
Yeah, that is generally how it works. But Will, so QA Isekai, what exactly is the story about?
So the manga opens in a rather European-esque war, sort of like...
feudal. Like high fantasy.
It's a bit more feudal, yeah. So it opens up with a young village girl named Nicola, who's going about with her daily chores, running her usual responsibilities, working at an inn, until one day dragons invade and she comes across a scholar named Haga, who seems to just kind of know a lot about stuff that exists around him. He's part of an elite society called the Seekers, which was created to address a series of issues that plague their usual peaceful world. But Nicola and Haga both have secrets that they hide, one that changes the very existence of each other. So this is very much a kind of... It's not... Let's be clear about the isekai aspect of this series, first of all. It's not like the I got transported into another world, straightforward isekai. This is a video game isekai. I think that's fair to say because that's pretty much like the first chapter of the manga.
Yeah, and I also want to be clear is that Will and I both have saw all the promotional material that has been released in terms of the animation announcement, but we will be spoiling... very lightly the premise, and it's very much like the first volume to kind of hook everyone.
You kind of have to, yeah.
Yeah, we kind of have to, and in this case, you really have to.
So the main crux of this series is the fact that Haga isn't a scholar. He's not some sort of sage that happens to understand the surroundings around him. He's actually a game tester. He works as a QA tester for a game company in Ikebukuro in Japan, one of the wards in Tokyo. So he is not essentially this sort of know-it-all that Nicola happens to think of him. It's more just somebody who actually goes around and debugs a game. He doesn't actually debug the game. What he does is that he actually goes around and tests certain environments, scenarios, game quests, and mechanics, and to see if they're working as they're supposed to, or if there needs to be some debugging, which is to essentially correct an error or fix a line of code that would otherwise brick the game.
And bug reports, and making sure, in a way, your job is in quality assurance as QA testers is to test the game and break the game, and sometimes, or a lot of the times, it is extremely repetitive and boring and kind of doesn't make sense, but that's the whole point because you're trying to exploit the game so when the game comes out officially or, you know, ongoing patches and processes, it doesn't fuck up.
Yeah, it's as seamless and as bug-free as can be, even though we have seen a lot of games come out recently just riddled with bugs, and it's like it's unplayable day one, so you gotta wait for the patch 1.0.1 to make sure that your game actually runs on the machine.
And it's half of the gigs of the game itself. And
half
whatnot.
Of the gig? Oh, dude. Like,
no, sorry, half of the game, sorry.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, half a gig is a very
like
small patch.
No, like 50 gigs or something.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
Dude, games nowadays are massive, but that's because of the fact that with the technology that we have, we are trying to, you know, push the boundaries of what a game can do and can look like. So it takes up a lot of space on your PS5, Xbox, Switch, or PC, or whatever you're playing on.
But
so,
there's
yeah.
a twist, though, that Will and I haven't mentioned that is extremely important in the premise of the story, which is...
it's set in the world of SAO.
Exactly. Yeah,
not literally, but they're in this game, and they can't log out.
Yep. And what do you do?
So in this sense, when we think back on SAO, especially since we've been covering it for the Gotta Watch 'Em All series, this conundrum affects different people. Because a lot of the people that, you know, are working as QA testers are very aware that this issue has been going on. The fact that, like, the issue, this is not a spoiler because it's literally the first chapter, they've been stuck in this game for a year. And therefore, it means that they are now kind of at the whim of just their own psyche, whether they can continue to actually do their job or have they accepted their quote-unquote fate and have just resigned to just living in this world with no hopes of ever logging out of the game.
And you have the QA testers known as seekers in this world, because that's like your identity when you address to the NPCs.
Yeah, essentially, like, that in the game itself, you are seeking, like, you know, to destroy evil, whereas in the real world, you are seeking out bugs to be able to fix the game.
They are the evil, so to speak. But you get a plethora of different characters who treat the fact that they can't log out very differently. And the first thing that I want to mention, now that the premise has been laid out, is... I am scared, Will, of SAO being real, Because if anything that I've learned from QA Isekai is we probably are not ready for that.
No. There's ever. A lot of... Okay, let's just get it right off the bat.
Yep.
There's a lot of fucked up things that happen in this anime series, this potentially coming out anime series.
Yeah, you look at the trailer, it looks very normal, very typical, and it has all those things are accurate.
It is kind of misleading in that sense.
It's so misleading.
Where it's just like, this is just a fantasy like series. No, it's not at all. Like, we know that it's not really set in the plot synopsis on my anime list, but we're going to say it now anyway because it happens within like the first 25 pages of volume one. So, like, that does not count as a spoiler. This is the hook. This is the way to get you into the series. So what is it about quality assurance in another world that we wanted to vouch for? Well, first of all, the premise is, for me, beautiful. I absolutely love it. It's probably because of the fact that like now that I work in the field of software development and programming, it's a really nice touch that they actually get into the technical terms of how they go about doing QA testing, especially when they're talking about like how to fix patches, how to find breakpoints, and do debugger tools to be able to fix certain issues. Because there's a lot of integrated design engines, environments that people use to develop code to be able to build a game. And then also the fact that they have like input commands or like code. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like certain character __up_forward, like basically like being able to have those inputs in there so that character movements are seamless, or that when you have because whenever you're playing like an RPG or like an action game and you have to have like enemy AI, like mm-hmm. how mm-hmm. characters like do certain moves or have certain patterns and stuff, those things have to be written in code. So yes. it's really cool to see that they don't just say, oh, this character is acting funny. It's more like, okay, this is the command to fix that error, and then boom, send that report to the QA testers.
Yeah, I think one of the things that the IP, the manga, does extremely, extremely well is they enlighten you on what QA is about. It reminds me of when I was a teenager, and I think probably a lot of our listeners, when they were teenagers, probably go through it, and even nowadays teenagers go through it, is they look at QA testing or work, oh, I get to play video games for a publisher and I get paid? What? That's awesome.
When reality, as one of the characters, they like, we're not playing a game, we're playing a game because it's work. And then the end, that's like, oh, when you actually talk to a lot of game developers and testers, it's actually not a whole lot of fun.
And it's a very thankless job because your job is sometimes so mundane, or like, oh, this led, I mean, I'm just making stuff up, but it's very indicative of QA testing. It's like, oh, this box should be opened because there's a prompt, but it doesn't open. Okay, well, then what do we do? Well, let's try throwing it, the box down a cliff. Let's try, well, if this key doesn't work, but what the master key works from the level dungeon, whatever, when it shouldn't, you know, things like that. They really go through the really mechanics of how you go through it, how you bug test, sending reports, even the descriptions and yeah. the trials, because you don't just do it once, man.
This is not a spoiler per se, but it is kind of like an example of how they go about doing QA testing in this game.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine the main character tells the other character, punch that wall. Okay, why? Wow. Yeah, go ahead, punch that wall.
Okay, I know what you're saying. It's okay. Really funny, but go on, yeah.
Punch it once. Okay, what do you do? Punch it again. Okay. I punched it 5 times already. Do it 10 more times. Oh, shit. Okay. The wall actually broke. This is a wall. It's supposed to load up the next part of the map. It's not supposed to break. And then the next 5 panels is just the character writing down this tablet... date, oh, location,
okay. Yeah.
Error, yeah. And boom, send.
Yeah, oh, okay. Maybe if you punch it, you break it, but what if we throw a tomato at it? Yeah. Or what if we, okay, it didn't work.
Oh, okay. there's a checkpoint here, so that means that it's used to give the game time to load the next map. What if we skip the checkpoint and go straight to the map? What do you mean? Like that's not how the game works. Like, but what if people actually exploited that? And right. people, and that's why, like, especially in the realm of games, there is a small but very, very devout subsector of gamers that very much focus on speedruns. And yes. through speedruns, you're not only just being really good at the game, you're also knowing how to exploit the game by finding glitches and bugs that allow for you to skip certain maps, fight certain characters way earlier than you're supposed to, and finish the game in an optimal time to hold speedrunning records. Like, there is a massive, like, not massive, there is a very strong fandom for this particular kind of gaming entertainment.
Yeah. And on top of all this, on top of all of this that we have said, Nicola doesn't know jack shit.
Yeah.
Only Haga, and I guess there are other party members that join up that are also QA testers that have different views and opinions about the state that they're in. And it is very fucked up because it happens really early in Volume 1 where you realize that something really bad happens and there's no other choice. It's deliberate because even though I have been talking with this character, I am a QA tester and they are NPCs and they have to go through certain event sequences and whatnot.
Yeah, that's the process of debugging. So in the realm of like software development and engineering, what happens is that when you try and test bugs, you don't just run the whole game and just see what you find, because that would take for fucking ever. So what they do is they essentially create an environment where they repeat the bugs, and then they have a breakpoint. So the breakpoint itself is when to stop running that simulation, when to stop running that program after you've uncovered the bug and tested it in an environment to see how often it occurs.
And maybe you have to add in variables on top of that to see if it breaks even more or it doesn't break under certain conditions. It's like trial and error in the very essence of it, yeah. right?
And so the first major bug that the main character, Haga, well, okay, it's an ensemble cast, but one of the main characters, Haga, finds is that while he's running this test, the major bug is that all the NPCs, all the villagers of this particular village are scripted to essentially die, because that's where the breakpoint is to make sure that they can test all the bugs. Except that there's one villager that does not die. In fact, after dying in front of his eyes, they magically reappear, even though that's not supposed to happen in that debugging environment. And that's when he realizes, oh shit, there's something else happening in this game. And I don't know what it is, but because I'm so devoted to becoming a really, really good QA tester, I'm going to figure this shit out. I'm going to leave it at that because the more I say will be actually spoiling mm-hmm. certain things.
All I will say is that Haga being our main male character among an ensemble like party, right? But he is essentially the true male main character that you follow the journey with, is convinced that of doing his job of a QA tester despite being stuck in the game because, and I don't think this is necessarily a spoiler, the motivation behind it is he is convinced that not only should he do his job because that's the right thing to do, but once the debugging has been completed in its entirety, then, you know, maybe he will be let out just like everyone else.
Yeah.
And that journey, I also have to emphasize, is they don't just go about the debugging stuff. They don't necessarily just go into that kind of dry content and edutainment.
Yeah, it's not just them going around and finding bugs. They definitely like really hone in on the fantasy element as well. Like,
and some of it is really fucked
there's
up.
There's a lot of good action. And like Jason said, right? With fantasy, it's not all magical and shit. There's also some real dark shit that happens in a fantasy setting. And they really, really, really do it well in terms of depicting like good and evil, black and white, you know, light and darkness. It's a really, really good series. Now, I do want to address the fact that the manga itself, though, only has a raw score of 7.
Which, and its member is 851.
Yep. So membership of only 851 people. Very, very small in terms of its membership and quite low on its popularity of like 16,265. And I have a couple of reasons as to why that's the case.
Mm-hmm. I think some of it is the same with me, but go on, yeah.
I honestly think, and no, look, this series has been running for a couple years, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, even in, like, you know, the Western world, being, you know, digitally published in English and all that since 2021.
I think there are, like, 6 or 7 volumes, maybe.
What I think is happening is that the general anime fandom is entering isekai fatigue.
Mm.
I think that what we've seen, especially with every season having at least 5 isekai fantasies or video game isekais, we're just kind of running the mill dry and not really seeing a whole lot of new shit. And so on first instance, when you see what the premise is, what the general tags or genres are for a series, you're kind of quick to make an assumption that this is just another isekai.
Yeah.
And you kind of move on.
And then when you look at the trailer footage, it really does look generic other than the title, you know, Quality Assurance in Another World. So it's an isekai, right? But if you just look at the trailer, it doesn't have that.
There's no isekai vibes at all.
Yeah, exactly. And it just looks extremely boilerplate. On top of all that, Studio Palette, unaffiliated with a GAP, and 100 Studios is not necessarily a very...
They're not household names.
Yeah. They're not bad. They're still doing decent work, but you wouldn't gravitate to them and being like, oh, they're a recognizable name in the grand scheme of, like, MAPPA, KyoAni, you know, Bones and everything, right? So it's like, if you look at, and it doesn't even have that kind of pedigree, like, if I say Project Number 9.
Yeah. But least, even then, it's like when we talk about Studio Palette specifically, the last 2 works that we mentioned in this the adaptation info, both of them were either isekai or, like, fantasy-based. So they clearly have, like, a good handle of how to do this particular genre or type of anime. So that part I'm not too worried about. Look, we're always going to have our reservations about how an anime is going to look when it's not a studio that everybody and their mom knows. So it's like, if you see something that's being done by MAPPA, oh, you know exactly what's going to happen. Madhouse. You do something that's done by CloverWorks. Great. What if it's like Signpost?
Yeah.
Right?
It's usually the inverse, right? With MAPPA, you have high expectations, and then you might get disappointed.
Exactly. You start off high, and you drop.
Yeah, here it's the other way around. There's low expectations, and you might be pleasantly surprised, but you're not holding your breath either.
Yeah. Now, in terms of, like, my overall enjoyment of the manga, 7's a bit harsh. But at the same time, I'm not going to be the one that's parading it as, like, oh, this is definitely an 8, 9, 10. Like, no, I'm not at that level either.
I gave it an 8.
It is, in my opinion, pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Right? For me, like, if I was to be, like, serious about how I would, like, rate it based on initial inspection, I mean, both Jason and I read about 4 to 5 volumes of this manga.
Yeah. So we kind of went hard.
But that should be an indication of, like, how good this manga is, and it should be.
But you see, if we go by, like, just a user on first inspection, right, you would probably just purchase the first volume or read the first volume. And in my opinion, there was enough to maybe convince you there's something more.
But there wasn't as much of a hook.
The biggest hook was a story of, I guess, a third character that joins your ensemble cast.
Yes.
And it is in the volume 2 that concerns also an NPC and a village that likes tea poses, let's just put it that way.
Yeah. That was a very good arc.
And that story was so heartbreaking to me that convinced me right then and there, be like,
that's actually also why I kept reading.
Yeah, right?
It was really good.
It's like, such a good story.
I think it's a shame, too, that, like, it might just be because of the fact that not a whole lot of people know about this manga, right?
Yeah, that, like, too. Comic Days?
In the West, specifically. Yeah. Because it's definitely got enough of a fandom in Japan that allowed for it to even have an adaptation in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah.
So that's why it's, like, it's always hard to gauge a the performance of an anime or a manga solely on my anime list because of the fact that it is predominantly a Western platform. When we know that a lot of anime adaptation, or even manga adaptation for that matter, is handled in Japan, irrespective of what happens globally.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of Japanese kind of publishing companies or animation studios really focus a lot more on the domestic growth, even though maybe in certain cases the international growth far outweighs the domestic growth.
Yep. So I would be the first to say, don't let like the rather, I wouldn't say subpar, I think like the more like borderline mid performance that it has right now in the manga like deter you from checking out the anime. But
I don't think it will do very well either.
It's a tough one. I want it to succeed, but again, it's like there's a lot of unknowns, right? Yeah. Like in terms of like the studios themselves, yes, they have done some decent work, but it's not enough of like a track record for you to give full confidence it's going to be a banger. But
they delayed, by the way.
If we were to just go by how much we appreciated and liked the manga, there is hope that it could be
absolutely
a pretty decent showing. I don't want to go as far as to give like score predictions for it just yet because I just want to be...
This one's a hard one.
Yeah, I want to be pleasantly surprised, or at least I feel like there's enough of like a redemption for the MAL score and it actually being a pretty decent showing.
Because generally, people, if they don't like the manga anime, they probably, some of them would gravitate to read the manga because there was an anime adaptation.
Yeah, in which case, if you didn't like the anime when it comes out, absolutely read the manga. The manga is really, really good.
The last thing I will say about QA Isekai is because of the promotional material that didn't cover it, I am unsure about the more darker, messed up stuff of the manga world.
Ooh, that's
not, I do that, not know how they're going to cover it.
That one's going to be a pretty tough one.
So
I think,
I'm very curious.
So here's the thing. I think that, you know, as we've seen, we've seen Hell's Paradise, right? Like, and they did not hold anything back. So I don't think that they're going to sugarcoat stuff, but I also understand in terms of like how they present it, right? They probably will like depict what happens in the manga anyway. They'll probably try to be as faithful as possible, but there's obviously going to be certain limitations as to how they can actually portray it.
Because I really think that even though the storyline that captivated both of us in Volume 2, and they might adapt it even panel by panel faithfully, if you don't capture the anguish that happens during that time, and it falls flat, it's almost like a deal breaker, even though you technically did it faithfully, right?
Yeah. Is there any like word in terms of how much of it is going to be adapted? Like, I mean, like how long it's going to be? It's probably going to be at one cur, right?
I mean, standard one cur,
which is
they usually will announce if it's not.
Another like slight issue for me because of what we talked about in terms of how Volume 2 is really, really good, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to be one of those, like, you know,
they rush through it,
either rush through it or like the good part comes a bit too late,
because they did announce on their like a promotional material like the cast of four main characters, so we know that it at least gotten to the point where the fourth main character makes an appearance, so we at least could at least gauge the content that they will cover in that cur. But yeah, I agree, right? It's kind of like what happens when you get to the good stuff, but no one is there to watch it because no one paid attention to it.
All I will say is that this looks promising, right? They've got, you know, a up-and-coming studio that does decent work in the fantasy slash isekai space. They've got good staff in place. They've got some good young, up-and-coming voice actors and actresses that are going to be taking the voices of Haga, Nicola, and the other characters that show up in the anime, well, the upcoming anime. My hope and my gut feeling is that this will do decently, but I would not be surprised if it tanks a little bit, especially when it gets to the latter stage of the cur. I think you probably have like a similar sentiment.
Absolutely similar kind of sentiment, but it's just the way the cookie crumbles with anime and manga industry, where sometimes really good shows or really good mangas don't get the time of day despite being front and center in your seasonal lineup. It's unfortunate. That's just the way it is.
Yep. We now move on to the second ASAP recommendation, which is primed to get an adaptation later on this year, Windbreaker, not to be confused with the manhwa Windbreaker. So this one is a manga that was written by Satoru Ni, who did both the story and art, currently ranked at 3,616 with a raw score of 7.42, which decent again. In terms of the manga itself, published in English by magazine Pocket, and then had a digital publication through Kodansha USA since April 26, 2022. It's also been simulpubbed through K-Manga, and if you don't have it on digital, you can also get it in print. It's been running since August 1st, 2023. So a little bit more of sort of like background info in terms of how this adaptation is going to be handled. Spring 2024 is the targeted release date, April, ideally, but again, no confirmed actual date. But this is the one that is probably the one that will interest people the most. It's going to be produced by Cloverworks. So you haven't really heard that name too much recently. Cloverworks has kind of been on like
Are they? I've never heard of them before.
Yeah, they're pretty pretty well known studio to have done some really beautiful work. But more recently, they've kind of been a bit more on the Spy Family train and kind of like not done a whole lot of other stuff besides it.
And also, when it comes to their original works,
Shut up!
Got it. But this ain't an original work, so no,
this
one, that.
Yeah. So this is probably one that, like, I don't have a whole lot to talk about. I know we said that we're going to be going over some real good stuff, but I'm just going to be up and honest with you. This is the only manga series of the four we're talking about that I actually didn't finish the first volume.
I see.
And there's a reason for it, but before I go into mine, I think because how many volumes have you read for this one?
Four.
Yeah, so you should definitely start off with your thoughts and opinion about, or at least just running down the manga series, because you've actually read way more than me. You've read more than four times what I've read.
But to be fair to you, I think the fact that you can't finish the first volume is also an extremely valuable opinion too, because that meant that there was a reason for that, and I think that could be the same reason for a lot of people when the anime comes out. But before that, let's get into the premise, because it ain't that long. Okay, random heterochromia, the eye color is different, and half of his hair is white, half of his hair is black, randomly shows up at, district marketplace?
Yeah.
And he just, all he
like
wants
a,
to...
Like a Tabaco market kind
yes,
of thing.
Yes, exactly. And all he wants to do... Oh, neighborhood market, yeah. And all he wants to do is just... He wants to be strong. He wants to be the best. And it's just fighting and then delinquents fighting and then joining this school that is full of apparently delinquents that are good at fighting. So you fight and then other schools fight you and then you fight other schools.
Just a whole lot of fighting.
Exactly. If you have seen a really old school Korean movie called Volcano High...
You made the same thing, the same reference as when we were talking about Butchigiri.
Yep. I think minus maybe the supernatural element part of Volcano High and Butchigiri, you pretty much have the premise of this manga and this show.
So you've gone through four volumes of it, so you've definitely read way more than I have. What kept you reading? Like, what was the hook that got you into? Because it's not like a set in stone requirement for us to read like exactly one volume of a manga when doing the ASAP episodes.
But we try our bare minimum to do one volume if possible, right?
Yeah. But for you, it's like you went like three volumes over, so you definitely like read more than what was needed to. What was it that kept you reading?
The art is essentially one of the main things that I really like about the manga, because when they fight, they really show the punches and the kicks in such a way that it felt very visceral. It's not the level of, like, I guess, a Baki or Kengan Ashura, because those are like Kengan Ashura being like S tier class, like actually MMA fighting, actually they're doing real grapple techniques. This is more like gangster fighting, but some they have a lot of two-page spreads of punches and kicks that I think are really gorgeous to look at. Then when you marry that with Cloverworks, which granted has some duds in their repertoire, does have a knack for making things look pretty, I think it is not a bad fit at all. Now, I remember at the end of Volume 1, they were at, let's just say, a border between two schools. And an incident occurs, and then that's kind of like the cliffhanger of Volume 1. That actually was very uninteresting at that point, because nothing happens. And it wasn't until the later volumes when the schools get more involved with fighting each other did it really become more interesting to me. Now, at the same time, the plot is super mid. Hella mid. It's one of those things where, like, imagine JoJo level of character uniqueness, not necessarily style, not necessarily flair, but like, the character designs in Windbreaker is very clear who is the side characters and who are the main characters. You know, you look at like, they have red hair, they have green hair, they're the main characters. Here, it's like the more extravagant that you look.
I mean, the kid, the main character that not only has heterochromia, but also has like black and white hair split in the half. Like you could not have more like main character syndrome than that.
Exactly. And a lot of the characters that are essentially the main characters all have distinct looks, whereas everyone else looks very plain clothes, right? I am probably the most worried about this adaptation process. But I also feel that it probably is not going to be a bad adaptation process.
So what was carrying you throughout this series was mainly the art style, right? And you marrying that with Cloverworks is probably like a match made in heaven. But for me, the reason why I kind of just stopped at like the midway point of Volume 1 was, it sounds weird to say this, but I got delinquency fatigue because of the fact that 6 months ago, we had the latest season of Tokyo Revengers.
Yep.
3 months ago, we had Bushigiri.
Delinquent.
And now we have Windbreaker.
Delinquent.
So it's not, I don't think that like a 6 month span is enough for someone to be like, oh, I'm bored of like delinquents and whatnot. Because if you look back before Tokyo Revengers, it was again the Christmas showdown of Tokyo Revengers. And then before that was again Tokyo Revengers. You had Ikebukuro, Westgate Park, and both Jason and I already said how much of a trash dump that one is. You have to go even further back to 2018 when we can then talk about Banana Fish. So it's not like there's a whole lot of delinquent-based anime that is like watering down the IP, that watering down the theme. I just felt that with Back to Back to Back, where Tokyo Revengers is incredibly popular. I absolutely love the manga. I'm a bit okay with the anime simply because I don't think it's produced that well, but that's just my opinion. And then Bushigiri, as much as the score has dropped in recent weeks, I really liked how it started out, and that's probably why, like, when I was reading Windbreaker, I was just like, I feel like I've kind of already seen this.
Yeah, and to further reiterate your point, let's take Banana Fish, right?
Yeah.
The delinquent part is not actually its distinguished feature.
No.
Yes, it is very much a thematic part of Banana Fish, but it is not just that, right? If you think of like, you know, I mean we're going way back, but think of like Beelzebub.
Yeah.
That is very centered around delinquents, right? There is Tengi Teki, Tinsa and Tinha, which is a very ecchi show about delinquents fighting. Air Gear is very similar vein. There's that hook of, oh, it's very out there, or there's lewd elements to it, fan service, right?
Oh, it's a Tenjo Tenge.
Tenjo yeah. Tenge. Teens are teen hot. Yeah.
Heaven and Earth, essentially. Yeah.
But all of those that I just mentioned have something, whether you can say that something is good enough or not, that is a hook that gravitates more than just being a delinquent school fighting delinquent kids. this show reminds me more of like West Park, Ikebukuro West Park, in terms of like, oh, we're just going to fight.
Yeah.
And we have no style. Oh, we have no substance.
It's really hard to see like what this has to offer beyond like beautiful artwork and animation. Look, this is not a knock on Cloverworks or Windbreaker themselves. I think that the fact that it's got a pretty decent following for the manga, not to mention that it has...
Because it's shonen. It's gonna scratch that itch for a lot of people, right? But here's the problem with my opinion on it. The parts that I would even say is quote-unquote good is somewhat far in. And same thing with how you feel about QA Isekai. If you don't get that far, because, okay, something looks pretty but has no substance, what are you going to do? You're not going to watch it. You'll be like, oh, it could have been. And then maybe when it gets there, you might get a group of people to refocus on QA Isekai or Windbreaker. The problem I have, and I think why we picked it for ASAP, is because it looks shonen as fuck, done by Cloverworks, so we wanted to check it out.
Yeah. It for me, like, just reading the manga, I was just like, a lot of these characters look a lot like characters from Tokyo Revengers.
Yeah. Oh, also, there is a speckled weak guy that joins, like, you know, the posse as the main character ensemble.
Yeah.
And what's his talent? Oh, he is Deku, really good at figuring out powers and, like, analyzing stuff, because you always need that smart guy on the side. Great. I've not heard that before. It sounds like I'm ragging on it, which I am. But I'm also kind of worried, because I'm thinking about it from Cloverworks' perspective. What are you doing? Maybe, and here, speculation here, you want to do something beyond just doing Spy X Family because you need something else, you know, in the pipelines. So maybe you got this in the door. It sounds like such a bad thing to say, as like, oh, this is our side project, our team B, or our thing that when we are taking a hiatus from Spy X Family to do, but it really feels that way to me.
Yeah, it's hard to see like what direction that they're going in right now in terms of like Cloverworks, because like in terms of like the last couple of releases they've had, it's mostly been Spy Family, right? They've had Spy Family, the movie as well, Code White.
Well, that's coming out.
Horimiya Peace as well. And then, of course, they have the Bunny Girl Senpai stuff as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's kind of... It's a weird time to be a Cloverworks fan, because you don't necessarily see a whole lot. Okay, I mean, the last great thing that's not called Spy Family that they've done is Butchie the Rock, right? Mm-hmm. And Butchie the Rock was massive. Mm-hmm. Like, still 8.8, topped the charts for a little period of time before
everyone things started stabilized. Won't stop talking about it, as they should not stop talking about it.
Yeah, and then before that, they had Shadow's House, which, you know, not as like highly acclaimed, but still like very popular enough for it to get a second season, right? So it's kind of also let's not forget Dress Up Darling too. So
yeah. And Wonder Egg.
So we don't know what's going on with Cloverworks at the moment, where it is kind of ambiguous as to what direction they're going in, whether they really did just put all their eggs into the Spy Family basket, or if that's, you know, now this is the time for them to actually start branching out and doing other things.
And here's the thing that boggles my mind. Why pick Windbreaker? Because if
like, I think it's what you said. I think it's just...
Is it?
The art style fits.
No, but also...
I think that's probably like...
Cash it in kind of thing? Your checks?
I mean, we've talked about like production committees and stuff, and like whether or not Cloverworks is going to make a whole lot of money out of this. But
yeah, and who knows, because we don't know those industry insider.
But I think it's stuff. Just the fact that, like, look, it may just be the fact that one of the animators or producers for Cloverworks is a massive Windbreaker fan. We don't know that, right?
Yeah, or Aniplex is like, look, we're not necessarily affiliated, but we're kind of still related. You're going to just fucking do it for us, because please.
Yeah, I think that this is a series that has the potential to flop. unfortunately. And like,
because it's so generic,
and you don't want it to, but it's also like you can't just like use your allegiances with Cloverworks to be like, no, it has to succeed, it can't fail, and all that. Like, in the end, like, if it sucks, it sucks. That's just how it is. Like, you and I are not going to die on the Tokyo 24th Ward Hill, right? Like, we watched it, we hated it.
Bro, this reminds me of that kind, right?
it's a weird manga to cover for this, but like at the same time, it's not so much that like when we do recommendations for specific genres or studios and whatnot, we really want to showcase the best of what they have, or at least like the most interesting and worth checking out. At the same time, when we do the ASAP, it's also like just kind of giving a lowdown of what to expect in the coming year and giving listeners and ourselves, you know, enough space to sort of really examine what's worth our time to check out.
Yeah. Originally, my motivation for Windbreakers was less about the property itself, but all the factors surrounding it, right? Like the fact that it is a delinquent kind of show or manga as well. The fact that it is Cloverworks, the fact that it's coming out literally like very soon in April.
In about a month, yeah.
And to me, that's why I picked it. It's not necessarily all of our ASAP picks will be bangers, but it would always drum up discussions is sort of what I think we want to also do. Because it's very easy to just pick a really highly rated manga and then say yay or nay. But I think this one is really weird to me.
Still though, 7.42 for the manga is a pretty good score.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, I think that like, for the people that are reading this manga and waiting for the anime to come, if you liked the manga, you'll probably like the anime, right? At the same time,
I'm not sure.
In what sense? What do you think? What do you mean by?
Because if the fight scenes are not kinetic, like, listen, let me put it this way. If the action scenes are choreographed in such a way that it looks like Tokyo 24th Ward rather than Wonder Egg Priority, that's by the same studio, but one looks really awesome and fluid, and one looks extremely stilted and unoriginal.
Yeah, but I think, like, with regards to Cloverworks, right? Like, for every Tokyo 24th Ward you have, you also have a Spy Family. You also have a Promised Neverland. You also have
a Horimiya.
Right? And, like, those are beautifully animated, some of which also have like real top tier like action sequences as well. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that they're going to skimp on that for this. At the same time, I don't know if it's enough to push the boundary for people who are on the fence about the series in the first place. Right? Like I went into this one like being as like unbiased, impartial as possible, but it was really hard for me to remain consistent throughout whilst reading it, because for me, I just kept on going back to, man, I just watched that from episode one of Butchigiri, like, yeah. How the first like chapter played out. Like this does not really, you know, tickle me in the sense, yeah, that like I want to keep on reading it.
And let me tell you this, Will, when the anime comes out, probably the first episode, because a lot of people will flock to any first episode just to see what's it about, your thoughts will probably be the same for me and a lot of people. They'll be like, isn't this kind of Tokyo Revengers, but without the hook and the awesome character development?
I mean, yeah, it's probably going to look better than Tokyo Revengers, for sure. But I, again, like, there's a reason why we've had, like, three seasons, as well as, like, a long ongoing manga series for, you know, I don't know if it's ongoing anymore, but it's definitely, like, run, like, well over 20 volumes. So,
what, when, Tokyo Revengers?
Yeah.
Tokyo
Revengers.
Isn't it finished?
I think it might be finished, actually.
Yeah. But, yeah. Windbreakers, I think it's an interesting conversation, but it's a wait and see more on, like, I don't know, guys. It's kind of iffy, but nonetheless, we will cover it probably for our seasonal premiere and give you our takes on how it pans out. At the very least, I can say it's popular enough, at least by the manga standards.
Yeah, I think, like, the bottom line is that this will still be a decent showing.
I agree.
I just think...
Do you want to give it a mouse score for the anime? Like an initial or...
7.2. I'll give this one a 7.2. If I was to, you know...
I agree.
Redact what I said about quality assurance, that one I would probably see at like a 7 point. Oh, that one's hard actually. I would probably like, I would hope to see at a 7.5. This one, on the other hand, I feel like it's kind of plain in sight what this anime will be about when it gets adapted. So it's not all that hard to guess how it's going to perform. It's as clear a plot and aesthetic as can be in terms of how to gauge the series.
I will say this about the later volumes that probably will be covered by the anime, even if it's one cur, which is, you know, in scenes where two dudes beat the living crap out of each other, and then over time, they within that fight, they learn about the human condition and each other and stuff like that, mumble-jumble stereotypical stuff.
Yeah, I saw that in Tokyo Revengers.
Yeah, in this section, they did it pretty well, in my opinion. However, and this is a huge however, it might be too late at that point for people to really pay attention. The fatigue of it all might be even of delinquents probably is too late for a lot of people. Timing is always a big deal when it could be you have a great anime production, you could have a great source even, but if your timing of it with trends and everything is not aligned, you might miss out. Honestly, that's how I feel.
Yeah. So I think where we stand on this particular series, Windbreaker, is that, look, if you're still on the delinquency train and you like, you know, full-on action and probably mixed in with some good visuals, this will be a good show for you. At the moment, for us, we're a bit more wary of how it'll perform. But this is just based on our past experiences of watching and reading delinquent-based anime and manga.
And there's not a lot on the trailers, too.
No, not at all.
The trailers don't really show very much at all. So, yeah. Sorry, I did cut you off.
It could be a surprise for us.
It could be a surprise, yeah. And we could eat our words. But as it stands right now, I think Will and I's opinions are quite aligned.
Yeah. There's only so much that we can do in terms of like predicting how it would go, because predictions almost never like go the way that you think they will. So we will check back on this when we do the seasonal premiere for spring.
Yeah, I definitely will.
Yeah. So that wraps up the first half, covering Quality Assurance in Another World and Windbreaker. We'll be taking a quick break, and then in the second half, we'll be covering the final two recommendations for the
ASAP. I really thought you were going to say it, though. Thank God. All right, we'll be back after the break. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the second half of episode 80 of the Good Anime Palette Podcast, where we cover our ASAP 5 picks. Will is here, I am here, Jason, we are ready to jump straight into our third of our 4 picks. Will, do you want to do the honors?
Yep. So we are going to be going into Orb on the Movements of the Earth. So the manga was done by Uoto, who did the story and art. In total, there are so far 8 volumes and 62 chapters, originally published in English and Japanese by Big Comic Spirits, and has been published in English of the same name by Seven Seas Entertainment. And the first release of it, which came out on November 21st, 2023, was a 2-in-1 omnibus. So that meant that you both got volume 1 and 2 at the same time. So that way, when they were releasing it, you didn't have to wait too long to get, you know, your real fill of Orb. So the manga at the moment is doing real well. Actually dropped a little bit based on the stats you picked up this morning. It's actually now sitting at a 7.98, but you know, it's a 0.01 drop. That's nothing at all, right? Popularity, yeah, is actually still good. Overall, 802 popularity. That's the ranking, sorry. Popularity of 3,800 with membership of 5,329. So it's still decent. You know, like in terms of like manga membership and all that, if it's not the big like manga series, it's not going to have a whole lot of people, but that shouldn't really hold you back on whether or not you should check out this manga. So it's going to be coming out in fall as a prediction, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's slated for 2024. And if it's If because most of the time, if it's already coming out for sure in 2024, it would have been like spring or summer at this stage, right? The fact that it still doesn't have a season it's going to come out, fall is probably going to be like our best prediction.
Yeah.
For it.
Again, if we exclude delays, right, the only possible timeline that we can predict, it will be in the fall. Usually, a lot of people, including, for example, I think recently one of the animes that we were thinking about covering, maybe even for our next ASAP, is called Nina and the Starry Bride. Mm. And it was announced a while ago, and they finally announced that it's coming out in July for summer. So we only heard it now, whereas the announcement was like months and months ago. So usually, even right before a month in, before the fall or summer, or the one preceding it, they will actually announce a date.
Yeah. Most of the time, whenever you see a series that is primed to be adapted for a certain year, it's a safer bet that it's going to come out later than earlier. That's, I mean, the fact that, like, they probably want more time to be able to adapt stuff anyway. So, like, you shouldn't behold them to trying to get stuff out as soon as possible.
And you don't want to kind of say an announced date and then renege on that or delay it. It's going to look bad.
Yep. What they probably won't renege on is the studio that's producing it, which is Madhouse.
Yo!
So, yeah. Quickly run down a little bit of a synopsis. We're taking you back to the 15th century in Europe, where religion is rife and heretics are burned at the stake for going against the church. We follow the adventures of a young, brilliant man named Raphael, who's about to enter university at a very, very young age and study the most important field that existed in that era, which is theology, the study of God and religion. But Raphael values reason above all else, which then leads him to sort of understand more about the inner dealings of the Earth and what the significance of Earth is in our overall solar system. Yes, this is a time when learning about the world that it exists beyond Earth was crazy, because the fact that technological advancements were there weren't really. There were no advancements at all. It was all down to theory, it was all down to observation, and it was all down to Inquisition. So basically trying to understand what lies beyond the truth of the Earth with our very own eyes.
I don't think we should say the second paragraph.
Okay. The second paragraph is a major spoiler.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think it's a bit dumb unless it was like the official synopsis.
It is the official synopsis.
Then I really think they should remove it.
Yeah.
We can read it because we've already read we've read the omnibus. We got it and we were like, yeah, no, like what they have here on my name is a bit of a spoiler. So if you're going to be checking out its Mal entry, don't read too much into the synopsis.
It ain't even Mal. The source is from Seven Seas Entertainment, the publisher themselves, bro.
Okay, never mind.
But that being said,
can't blame Mal then.
But we ain't going to spoil it, the second paragraph for you. But that's the premise in a nutshell. One thing I want to mention is the main premise of essentially what Orb is about. What's the subtitle again? The Orb, the full name?
On the movements of the Earth.
Exactly, because the main crux of this is about heliocentrism, which is a belief of the sun revolves around, everyone revolves around the sun. Whereas geocentrism, which is, at that time, people believed that because the Earth is the most important planet, we live on Earth.
Well, it's because God created Earth.
Exactly.
And therefore, that it's the center of the universe.
Because we are the center.
Therefore, everything revolves around the Earth, which nowadays, with the advances that we have in technology and understanding astronomy and all that, that's not true at all. But 15th century Europe did not know that.
But shortly thereafter, if we go by IRL spoilers, they found out about heliocentrism, and it actually, before even telescopes and all that crazy technology to verify it, they figured it out. And this is essentially the journey of people trying to figure that out, and the cost of it against the religion, against the common belief at the time.
It's essentially the friction that exists between reason and ideals. And I'm not talking about like the, because the fight between reason and ideals is very much the synopsis of Pokemon Black and White. For any Pokemon fans,
yeah,
that's not what it is. This is about Orb on the movements of the Earth. Okay.
One thing I want to mention, sorry to cut you off, I just found this out. It won the grand prize at the 26th Tezuka Osamu Cultural Prize in 2022. So that's a huge deal.
I mean, a lot of other manga series we've covered before also won the award. It ended up being really, really good adaptation. So yeah, that's a pretty good track record.
And then when you marry it with the MAL scores already for the manga, and then you grab a studio that kind of has a second coming, if you will, a revival of going through a certain journey that is beyond one's end.
Definitely had its Phoenix Down.
Yep. And then it's just like, yo, you know what we're going to do next, guys? Do you like astronomy?
I think the fact that, like, a lot of the stuff that they actually talk about in the manga is incredibly dry, because it's very like technical, it's very mechanical,
it's actually quite simple too.
And but when you factor in the fact that it's set in a time when those things barely existed, right, the understanding of the movements of the Earth and the
physics
universe,
and
it makes sense why they go heavy in that terminology. And the fact that like the manga cover for the Omnibus is of the main character holding an astrolabe and like looking up looking up at like the stars in the sky, you kind of know what direction it's going in on a basic premise.
Yeah,
on the basic premise, because, and without going into spoilers, when we were saying that things get a little bit dark in Quality Assurance in Another World, Orb is a fucked up series. Incredibly fucked up. You have to think about a time back in the 15th century in any world, right? In any area of the Earth, where if you like disbelieved the very ideals that make your society, you were branded a heretic. And in Europe at the time, if you were a heretic, your punishment was not just death. It was to descend to the bottom pits of hell, which meant that you were burned at the stake.
Alive.
This was a time when, for example, if somebody slipped and did not fall, people could say you're a witch. And immediately throw you into a pit cage and try and sink you.
Oh wait, what was it like? Oh, the feather weight. Oh, you're weightless. Oh, fucking, you are doing black magic.
What was really crazy as well was that, like, at the time they also thought, like, oh, if they're a witch, that means they're going to float when you throw them in the water. If they're human, they're going to sink. In which case, they're going to die in either sense. Like, what the fuck?
Oh, because we tied a rock, because, you know, or something like that. Also, to further reiterate how bleak the setting is, which, by the way, to my knowledge, maybe minus the characters' names, I don't know if they're actually those historical characters are actually existed in the pantheon of human history.
I think the fact that, like, when you look at the character entries on my anime list, or especially when you're reading the manga as well, that they only have their first name and no family name afterwards, I think it's like they're just meant to be,
they're like stand-ins,
representations of characters from that time period. That's why you have things like Schmitz and Lewandowski and Novak, Draka, Oxy, Raphael, Jolenta. It's like they're just place in names, but that doesn't mean that they're of no significance,
and that doesn't mean that the stuff that they go through or the stuff that they think are irrelevant to even modern society, because back then they just went through what is known as the Black Plague. And funny, in real life, IRL 2024, what did we just experience previously? COVID-19. It's not completely analogous, but it's almost weird how the timing of it all is so eerily kind of similar.
And you also saw during like COVID-19 that there were, and this is not to call out anybody, but a lot of like oppositions in terms of like COVID protocols based on the protection of religious rights and religious freedoms.
Or conspiracies. Yeah. We're not saying that some of these conspiracies are not warranted or verified, but there was a lot of like rumors of false truths, fake news going around. This is really much still relevant in 15th century Europe, especially in the manga Orb, because what if you say something that is against the common belief? even though you might be right, it turns out you were right. But the audacity of it all, especially when one of the characters, I will just be very vague as possible, has a certain belief that it's like his mind and his way of life literally broke down to the point where he can't look at the sky until a very pivotal point. And when he does, it was almost like putting your fist up in the air and I need to high-five someone while reading this digital manga.
There's also characters where it's like they're so hell-bent on their belief being reality that they keep on like spending days, months, years trying to prove that theory. And when things go awry, immediately their sense of purpose is gone. Like, that was how bleak life was as depicted in Orb, where like you have to have your own significance of existence based on one particular thing, and if that thing no longer existed, you have no aim in life, you have no meaning to live. And that's why it's like the reason why I'm so into Orb is because of the fact that we have some of the most unhinged characters I've ever seen in a manga,
but at the same time it feels very natural.
Yeah.
Like,
you have to understand the context of what they existed in, right?
And they really, even if you know jack shit about, you know, a 15th century Europe, which, to be fair, I'm not a scholar or a historian to know that much either, they really still put you almost in that mindset that with modern culture and popular culture and popular media, you can already integrate yourself in their way of life and the way that they think, or simple panels of... Sometimes even like a before after, like there is a scene where a bunch of nobles talk to a beggar.
Oh, and
it
yes.
was kind of like a random yes. panel.
That was so fucked up.
It was such a random, it was a panel that is really like just kind of in literally in the background. Then all of a sudden a bunch of events occur that is unrelated. Then I guess the character walks back like through them. And then you see the aftermath of that scene, and you're just like, as the reader, well, that's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
Oh, there's some drilling.
Yeah. Hopefully you guys don't hear, but if you do, we apologize in advance. So the thing that like really, really like excites me about this is the fact that it's Madhouse doing this.
Yep.
The other thing that's really exciting about it is that whilst the manga is very well received, it was actually quite short-lived. It only ran for 8 volumes and ended in 2022. So,
it wasn't axed.
Not axed at all. Like, just to be clear, it was not canceled.
It was a limited run. It did its job, and it moved on.
Yeah, it did a Pluto, basically. What I will say is, because of the fact that there's only 8 volumes, I'm pretty confident, especially if Madhouse is to continue their ride back to the ascent of anime production, we could see of the 4 that we're talking about, an actual completed adaptation.
So here's my prediction, Will. I'm glad you mentioned it. I also agree with 8 volumes, you can easily do a double cur, okay? And here's my other prediction.
Madhouse is definitely like okay with that. I have no problems with them like thinking this is an achievable thing to do. That's probably why they still haven't like announced an official date of release, because they're probably still like
Fieren. They're still doing Fieren too, yeah. Right? But here's the other thing, Will. I think the premiere episode is gonna take place up to the point of someone drinking something in a cell.
No, you shouldn't say that. I think basically the first episode is just gonna be all of volume 1.
You're right.
Yeah.
Actually, now I think about it, it did end at volume yeah. 1 of 2. I forgot it was halfway through, but then I realized it was a 2-in-1 omnibus. Yeah.
They're going to pull off Yeren. It's going to be a 2-hour premiere.
And I bet you the first episode is going to end there. Do you think that's a very fitting end?
Yeah. I think like how we've seen Fieren play out, how we've seen Oshinoko play out, there is no better way to run the series of Orb on the Movements of the Earth by having all of Volume 1 play out.
Yes, and even though Dogakobo did Oshinoko, I think the thing that Will and I are trying to get at is Oshinoko is a very acclaimed manga series before the anime adaptation. Fieren definitely is a very acclaimed anime series, manga series before the adaptation. Orb is exactly fits in that pattern.
Not so much acclaim. I think, like, in the end, like, when you talk Fieren and
Oshinoko,
like, super high. Absolutely, like, but that's also because they ran for a bit longer as well, right? And I think Oshinoko is still ongoing, too.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Whereas this, on the other hand, yes, it does have the Osamu Tezuma Award, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Tezuka Osamu Award. It definitely has that acclaim. It's not as acclaimed as the other two, but I still think that with everything it's got going for it, despite it not being as acclaimed as Oshinoko and Fieren, there's no better way to start this series than to have a two-hour premiere yet again by Madhouse.
And bear in mind, actually, other than the announcement of 2024 and they're going to do an anime adaptation, there is zero, to my knowledge and Will's knowledge, zero other footage, promotional material of Orb currently available. And it is aggravating to not know more.
Yeah. I think that based on what we've said in terms of how this will be adapted, this could be done in two double curves.
Easily.
Yeah, like 48 to 50 episodes.
Wait, 48 to 50?
Yeah, two double curves.
Hmm.
Look, first episode, two-hour premiere, right? That's already volume one. Then they'll have 11 episodes to do volume two, potentially volume three. That's just season one, right?
Yeah, and then
the second season, they could easily do 4 to 5 volumes.
No,
it might be a bit rushed, but I think that if they were to do it, it probably makes. I don't know if they want to stretch it to like 5 or 6 curves. I think they probably would keep it as concise as possible, not as short as possible. I think 48 to 50 episodes is enough to be able to get to the bottom of Orb in terms of an anime adaptation.
I would say it would technically be a 2-cur run with probably the premiere and the maybe mid-season or the finale or all of the above.
Actually, to be fair, if it's a double curve for like the first season with episode one being a 2-hour premiere covering volume one,
yep,
there's nothing to say that they won't be able to cover 4 volumes in the first in the first season of 2 curves.
Yeah, I kind of see where you're going.
Yeah, because as we've read it, there are certain parts where you can cut out from the first two volumes that we've read.
Because there's like they're moving or something, or the speech, maybe you can condense it in terms of explaining things. I can kind of see that. Yeah, you're right.
It is a bit more on the rushed side, I admit.
But I do think they will do a complete.
Yeah.
They almost have to, in my opinion.
Yeah.
We have not said a lot about kind of what goes on in the manga, but it's such a hard thing to put your finger on, because on one hand it sounds like something that, why is it an anime and not like a TV live action series, which I understand if you have that opinion, but also on the other hand we have something here that I think is very
It's set in an era and a world which is not very often depicted in anime and manga. Talking about an ideology that very much goes against everything that existed in that time period, to the point where if someone were to go out and say it,
just say it, even it in the streets,
it would, one, completely break down the very fabric of society that they live in. But also, too, on the other hand, lead everyone to brand you as a witch, a heretic, a madman. And the only thing they can do is tell you to immediately repent and apologize or die.
And sometimes both.
Yeah.
And it's weird that we're talking about almost like philosophical ideas and mentality and all this in like the guise of an anime adaptation and a manga, but that really is what this manga is about. And it is such a, I really can't put it into words when you see these characters go through shit.
I think what it is we've definitely, I mean, you and I have read and watched a lot of anime and manga that definitely cover a lot of philosophical aspects, mm-hmm. right?
Like even in Shonen Action, there could be very much a lot of these.
On the other hand, is an anime / manga about philosophy, about theology, about the understanding of the world and man. Like, this is what the crux of the series is. And I don't think it's been done before. And that's why I think this one is, like...
And that's why it's so successful.
I'm the most excited about this one.
Especially after The Madhouse coming off of Fieren. This is, like, in the shining spotlight, you're going to be like, guess what? We're going to aim fucking higher. You thought sun... we all revolve around the sun? No. Y'all revolve around Madhouse.
Yeah. In true orb fashion, they're doing God's work.
Ooh. God's work? Okay, but I will say this.
Before you go on, do you have any hesitations about this series?
Oh, okay, define hesitation.
Like, where do you feel it's like it's going to be a dud? Do you think it's not going to be animated well? Do you think that maybe, like, because of the way that it paces itself, it might end up being a bit slow or boring or whatnot? Or anything that would lead you to think maybe this won't perform as well as we'd hope?
Okay, so there are multiple questions, and I'll address all of them. I think Madhouse is going to do a fucking banger job based off of what they did with Fieren.
Agreed.
I just think that that's just, okay, we can be proven wrong, but it's hard to be proven wrong given the track record of Fieren.
You can't deny that Madhouse has been doing banger after banger after banger, and they're not going to stop.
Like recently, too.
They're not going to be stopping with Orb.
Then you talk about whether or not it will be a dud, or whether or not people will be receptive of it. And this is the part where I think a lot of people have no choice but to speculate with the information that we have, because we don't even have footage of the anime in motion. So,
It took Fieren for a long time to actually get an adaptation too, and we were oh so surprised. So I feel that it's going to happen with Orb, but like you said, it's purely speculation at this stage.
My opinion is it won't rock everyone's socks off, but it should be higher ranked in like the jury, in like the critic corner kind of way. I hate to really split it like that.
I'll come out with a rather rambunctious malprediction.
Let's go. Let's do it. I love this.
8.6. I think it will be that high because I don't...
Wait, what would be an 8.6 though? Like, what rank number would it be? Let me see.
8.6 would probably put it in the top 200 easily.
8.6.
I think like there's a lot going for it. It's a genre or no? It's a theme that we
8.6 is 85.
Yeah,
85, 86, 87. Cyberpunk Edgerunners is 85. Hajime no Ippo Rising is 86, and Suzumiya the movie is 87, all with 8.6s.
It's better than Mugen Train.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I will say it'll be better than Mugen Train. It'll be better than New Evangelion movie. It'll definitely be better than the original adaptation of Berserk.
So, my opinion is... I think you're not aiming high enough, in my opinion. I'm being dead serious.
So you're thinking not top 100, you're thinking top 50. Maybe even higher than that. Like, this could potentially be the one that rocks the charts again on MAL.
I think when we look back on anime, like 10 years from now, we will mention a lot of, you know, the standard JJK, the standard things that are, or Demon Slayer, that are outstanding in its own right. But there will always be that one shining example, pun intended, because an historically accurate... It's not even like a Vinland Saga where there is like brutal like Vikings pillaging, and you know what I mean? Like there's action in Vinland Saga, and through that you learn about character development, character drama, and strife. Here, the violence is more about going against the grain, even though there are a lot of quite brutal scenes, but they're far and few between. And furthermore, in my opinion, this is the scariest thing that is going against the grain, potentially dying for believing in what you believe in, even knowing that you're right, and even they know that you're right, but they don't want it to be true. And dying for something that you believe in is such a crazy, awesome, scary thing to do. And when you see it being done in this context, that where would you know about character, like historical drama that is really rooted in reality?
I don't know, but the way you're talking about it, you're making it sound way more than top 50. It sounds like this could potentially be top 10.
Well, it wouldn't be because of the... I don't think it would be that popular. That's unfortunately how I feel about it.
Oh, I absolutely don't think so either. I think that, like, maybe you'll at most get, like, 200,000 members. Something like that, right? But, again...
I would say even, like, 150,
100, something like that?
100 to 150, if we're lucky. Yeah. If we're lucky. I really again, don't think it will even reach
membership
that.
And scores don't correlate, right? Like, I think in the end, like, to say it's as impactful as, like, a Fieren or even an Oshinoko, for that matter, possible. It's possible.
I think it's because no one knows what to do with it. And what I mean by that, I mean there is no hook other than the pure essence of what it means to be a human being and what you believe in. But there is no magical girls.
You have to be
there is no sci-fi. Yeah. There is no fictional isekai.
So you're going with more like a strong, like very strong cult following.
Not only that, it's going to be amazing. It needs to be. I want it to be.
But you feel that it might still be a bit underappreciated.
Absolutely. That's really how it goes.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think even with the allure of Madhouse as well, like with the premise like where you have to really be all in, it's hard to get everybody on the same level.
Let me put it this way.
It's very easy for people to just like be done with it and be like, it's good. Like, you and I have read.
Yeah.
You and I both know.
And granted, we only read up to volume two of eight because that's all has been released in English, right? So maybe things change down the line. Who knows? But I don't think it will. I will end my parting thoughts on this. If you want an accurate of a parallel to how I feel about Orb without spoiling a lot of things that Will and I have been skirting around, it's a very simple explanation that I will give you. If you like To Your Eternity, but imagine the first couple of episodes of To Your Eternity and multiply that by the length of whatever cur they want to go through or however, that is, and the feelings and emotions that you feel during the first couple episodes or like the first volume or two of the manga of To Your Eternity, that is why Will and I have spent so long talking about Orb without really talking about Orb. Because that kind of sentiment that I felt is very much reflected in Orb. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I just... It's not that I want this to succeed. I know it will succeed. At what level is to be determined by the general fandom when it finally releases. I think that also the fact that like it's dragged out this long in terms of when it will release, that may also like either like increase or detract from the overall attention of the series.
I mean, take a look at another series that I have been jonesing for a long time, Pluto, which is quite relevant in terms of kind of the timeline of things.
Man, we're really talking about Orb. Like, it is going to be like a pivotal series.
It's the second coming of Christ,
Jesus
right?
Christ. We talked about Fieren and Oshinoko. Now we're talking about Pluto. God, like this. We are.
I think it deserves to be up there.
We are going as all in seal of approval from GAP as possible on Orb.
We have a mutual friend from Taiwan. I don't think she lives in Taiwan anymore. She kept telling me about Orb. Because they came out in Taiwan first, because it usually does. And I was like, what the fuck is this? All right, sure, I'll think about it. Then all of a sudden, couple of months, like 6 months later, the announcement happens. then the omnibus happens. Then now we're reading it. It's what I will say is, like, I forgot, I lost my train of thought, but like, it's gonna be really good. That's really how I feel about it.
We finally then move on to our final manga that we're gonna be talking about for ASAP 5, which is The Fable. It is a ongoing manga series
Related to the DC comic series.
Oh yeah, to be clear about that. Also not related to the video game series as well. So it is done by Katsuhisa Minami, who did both the story and art, originally published in English in Young magazine, which is funny because it's not young at all. It's definitely very mature. Published in English by Kodansha Comics USA digitally as of March 31st, 2020, and then in print in February 2021. I think that there was also a sequel for it as well. The second contact. But that one was that we're not talking about that one. We're going to talk about the original first series first. So did win a Kodansha Manga Awards, the 41st one, in the general category. The scores for this is just insane. First of all, the raw score of 8.53 for a manga, first of all, right?
Yeah.
That ranks at 127. Popularity, 390. Members, 42,907. To give some background information on the anime adaptation process, this is the only one that actually has a fixed date. April 6th, 2024. So Eiga.com has reported that after the first episode airs, all other episodes will be available at once on Disney Plus worldwide. Disney Plus Japan also stated all episodes will stream all at once on the service exclusively worldwide, effective of April 7th. The anime will air for two continuous curs. A double cur.
Straight off the bat, right. Now, I just want to reiterate, when we found out about the Disney Plus streaming and the worldwide release, I am unsure, other than to take it at its word, when they say all episodes. Could it be all double curs or just the premiere? I have no clue, but it sounds like all of it.
Yeah.
Like the whole enchilada.
And then, of course, the final bit in terms of the anime adaptation is that it will be done by Tezuka Productions. So, if you are familiar with that name, it's because they did My Home Hero. It's because they did Under Ninja. Two series that were kind of like under the radar and ended up being just decent. But we've also talked about My Home Hero being... it could have been a lot better if done in a different way, because the manga itself is incredible. So we're going to talk about the manga of The Fable. Follows a legendary hitman known generally as Fable, because as fables go, it's just a myth, right? This is a story. There's no way that there's this...
it is a legend.
Yeah, there's no way that there's this cold-blooded killer that can just mercilessly destroy his targets and just be okay with it. This must be the work of a deranged man. Like, this person cannot be a functioning member of society. Well, unfortunately, because this guy killed way too many people, he now has to lay low for a bit just to be able to equalize the numbers. And so for this fable, then needs to be, taken out from... not taken out.
Has to be benched.
Yeah. Basically, he needs to chill out. So he now then has to actually become an ordinary citizen and... not go around killing any more people.
And accompanying him is his quote-unquote sister, because they both have to get, different identities.
Yeah. Originally, she was his getaway driver.
Handler of sorts, right?
Yeah.
And the manga is literally just about them getting acclimated to essentially a year of lame nothingness.
The most brutal and cold-blooded killer of all time in this manga now has to embark on his slice of life arc.
And then has to embark on probably the most dangerous foe ever, boredom.
Because once you get into the underworld, sometimes it's kind of hard to do normal things. And the mind wanders, and you then have to think about if I'm able to actually acclimate myself in being an ordinary citizen. Now, The Fable as a manga itself is...
Okay, let's get into this. Okay. Yep. Well, yeah.
I've read 9 volumes of
Holy the Fable. Shit! There's 22 volumes out already, but you read 9? I read...
The Fable is incredible.
No wonder you wanted to end it on this. Oh, God.
I absolutely loved reading The Fable. I actually stayed up till 3 last night just because I
finished... You mean this morning?
This morning, yeah. Just because, like, I just finished Volume 8, and I was like, no, I gotta read more. And by the time I reached 3:30, I'm like, okay, no, I have to stop now, otherwise I'm gonna oversleep. I'm not gonna make it in time to do recording. So I'm gonna...
That's why you were tired? That's hilarious.
I begrudgingly put down the iPad... because I had it all on there, all the digital copies on there. It's like,
oh. Money.
Yeah, they made a lot of money off me.
Now, I read only somewhere in the middle of Volume 2. But let me tell you why. I just had other stuff I needed to take care of, and fair. I've read enough.
Fair.
Okay.
But it was enough for you to be convinced of what you're going to say.
Let me tell you what I am worried about first.
Oh, okay. Let's address the elephant in the room.
So, judging by what the rate that Will has consumed, and judging by what I kind of implied, you can probably guess how we feel about it, and we will get into that, right? The problem, unfortunately, no throwing shade, is Tezuka Production.
And we've seen this happen before with My Home Hero, because we then compared it to how the manga actually played out.
Or how it looks.
And, yeah, it's...
My Home Hero looks great. It's a seinen manga.
It's day and night, man. And I kind of wanted to end on this note, but now that we're here, we might as well talk about it now. The adaptation for The Fable, is a very worrying one for me.
Because we also saw the trailer. There was two of them.
We have seen how this played out, and judging from the trailers we've seen now, it kind of is looking to go in that direction as opposed to a more positive direction. Now, that's not to say that it's going to completely tank. I mean, even My Home Hero still holds a positive score of 7.1, something around that area.
But the problem that I have, right, with Tezuka Productions with My Home Hero is I didn't have skin in the game for My Home Hero as much as I do for The Fable. Because let me reiterate how worried I am in relation to... Okay... Look, Under Ninja and My Home Hero. If you just look maybe a couple of minutes of any episode of that production, you can kind of... And then you look at the trailer, which is like, I don't know, like a minute each of the two trailers. You kind of go, it kind of looks and feels and moves and animates the same. Okay. Well, what are we going to do about it? The thing is... The Fable is fucking hilarious. It's fucking dumb. Dumb in the sense that... How do I explain this? Actually, wait. Before I get into how I feel about the manga, since we're on the topic of the production, what do you think?
I share the same thoughts in that... This is the problem that I have in terms of doing adaptations for seinens. Which is actually kind of funny because, like, you know, in our previous episode when we were doing workplace and office anime, Servant Service or Servant X Service is technically a seinen.
Technically.
Yeah. This is very much a seinen. But we've seen how seinens get adapted. And most of the time, because of the fact that the material they have in the manga cannot fly in anime, I feel that whatever they cut, and I know what they'll cut from the manga... It's going to detract from the overall enjoyability of the anime. And it's unfortunate, but it is a necessary evil. There are a lot of things that are portrayed in The Fable that cannot make it to screen. It would not fly.
I did not know that. Maybe like I have to read later on, which I'm heavily convinced, right?
Well, I mean, you're talking about Yakuzas here, right? And this being a seinen Yakuza and not a shonen Yakuza, they're going to go into areas that very much are adult themed.
Yeah, but there's Gantz.
Gantz is one thing, but I mean, name another besides Gantz.
That is like that, just as violent and.
I'm not talking about violence here.
And
I'm not talking about that.
Okay, then what are you talking about?
I'm talking about nudity.
Right. Okay. Because there's also a lot of nudity in Gantz, to be fair.
Yeah, right. And like, again, like we have seen like anime series that have a fuck ton of like nudity, and therefore then you have like some platforms that decide, oh, well, we'll just do the uncensored airing then. We have all the uncensored stuff. You want to come to our platform, watch it, be our guest.
But I don't think Tezuka Productions has a habit of doing that in general.
I mean, we would have seen it with My Home Hero. And this is not, again, a slate on My Home Hero. It's just that we've been there, we've done that, we kind of know where we're coming from here. So it's kind of following that train of thought where if this is how Tezuka Productions adapted My Home Hero, I can't see them doing any differently for The Fable, which sounds like I'm pretty downbeat on it. And you're right.
Like, I'm pretty downbeat on it, to be fair.
Yep. You know, but that all aside, in terms of like my perspective, and I'm sure Jason's perspective, as of you know how much we've read, and I'm sure when you keep on reading, I'm sure you'll have the same sentiment as well. The Fable is one of the funniest manga series I've read.
It's very dark humor.
Yeah, and it's done so well that like that might also be like what detracts the enjoyability from the anime, because I feel like there are certain instances in the manga where comedic parts only really play out on paper.
And in silence, actually, as well. I would agree. Would you agree that there's actually not a lot of
action? There's not a lot of action, actually.
But there's a lot of silence. A lot of like
stills, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of like still frames, or like we just walk, right? It does remind me of Gantz in a way of like, when things come, it's like really fast and unexpected, and then it just disappears.
With Fable, what actually happens a lot is two characters standing face to face and talking.
Yep.
And that's what actually is like the main appeal of Fable. Yes, there are a lot of like real dark comedic parts to it as well, where you can see some really fucked up shit. I mean, you see a lot of fucked up shit, but like the sort of banter and dialogue that the characters have, it's incredible. I absolutely love reading The Fable. And it's not just a sentiment that Jason and I share. Like, okay, there's not a massive sample size, but if you look at the sort of reviews, without reading the reviews, because a lot of them are kind of spoiler-esque, 18 people recommended the series. Two people had mixed feelings. Not a single person did not, like, not recommended. Like, basically, like,
didn't post a review saying that you do not recommend.
There has not been a negative review of The Fable in its manga form.
Which is rare.
So, as a standard GAP, like, fashion, if the anime don't fly, at the very least, you got the manga.
Yeah. So, let me tell you the two moments in Volume 1 that completely sold me from the get-go, that I just smiled from ear to ear. The first one that gave me a little bit of a chuckle and a grin was something that involved a bet in a garage about a camera.
Yep.
And then the result of that, and I was just like, that's kind of cool. That's kind of, I get it. That's kind of cool. Then came probably the end of Volume 1 that involved a fight about that was really short. And the acting and the precision and what it all went down is so calculated to the point where it's like whoever that person is narrating, because I'm trying to avoid names, is a fucking machine, is fucking pro at looking dumb on purpose, whilst at the same time explaining to the reader punch by punch, hit by hit, what is going to happen, and all happens in front of you. Then all of a sudden, he looks at a comedian clip and just laughs, and then that's the end of the chapter. And you're just like, what the fuck? What was that? Like what?
I'm a huge fan of The Fable.
I think I love The Fable.
Of all the manga that we've read for this particular episode, as much as I love Orb, because I know what I'm going to be getting out of it, and like it really...
It's a safe choice in terms of how we feel about how Orb could result in, right?
The Fable, on the other hand, though, for me, is the one that I actually... I mean, the fact that I read the most out of it, of all the manga series we talked about...
Says a lot.
I am... Like, I enjoyed reading the Fable the most. However, I am also the most cynical in terms of how it's going to be adapted.
I... With Orb and Fable being our last two was very appropriate because I know how, like, rationally speaking and through, you know, past histories with the property and the studios involved, I know how the Fable and the Orb should result in, you know, exceptions aside, right? With Orb, I'm very confident it will do good. Okay.
Yeah, I think that in terms of, like, where the Fable is, in terms of, like, where we stand on its adaptation, we've been pretty clear that adapting seinen is a very, very tough act, and I don't think the Fable is going to break that trend. But rather than just saying, like, outright, oh, like, we're not going to recommend watching this, I think it's very much something that you should watch just to see if it could potentially be a good adaptation. For the most part, I don't think it's going to perform that badly. There's not a whole lot to run off of from just looking at the trailers. Similar to how we were when we were looking at My Home Hero and whether it will be a good adaptation. But at the same time, whether or not you enjoyed watching the anime when it comes out in April, I have no hesitation at all in recommending to everyone that watching the reading the manga is going to be a blast. Now, especially if you are of a younger age, maybe don't read it. There's a lot of adult themes, a lot of mature themes there that you really should not be reading at your age. I can't stop you because I'm not your dad. But if you are of age, if you are ready to take on what the Fable has to offer, I guarantee, 110% guarantee, that you will not be disappointed. There's really, at least in very much like my own opinion, there's not a whole lot to dislike about the Fable. The characters are done really, really well. They carry themselves very much on what they're supposed to do. The way they act, the way they talk, the way that they interact with all the other characters around them in a setting that is very much like dark and grim, that is the underworld, right? The world of Yakuza. I absolutely love the way that the characters are written, how they're portrayed. And let's not beat around the bush. The art style of Fable is seinen as fuck. Like, this just looks like this is an adult comic. And adult in the sense that it's more for older audiences rather than being of the pornographic audience.
For those wondering real quick what just happened, I just realized our delivery person had to... message. Oh, sorry, I'm a bit out of breath. And he was waiting for us, so I tipped him because he waited a while. But it's all good. Sorry. Will had to hold down the fort. Okay. I'm assuming you went into the more risque elements of
The manga and why even if you don't enjoy watching the anime when it comes out next month in April, that you should not hold yourself back from getting yourself a copy of Fable and reading the manga. The manga, at least, you know, from what I've read recently in terms of all mangas, it's close to perfection. I really like the Fable.
Do you know what the Fable reminds me of? Is another series that is again seinen, also has a lot of dark humor, that you probably have heard it before for sure, and have heard me mention it before, but not in a while. The Corpse Delivery Service.
Yeah, I thought you were gonna say Ichi the Killer. But that one's just more fucked up.
That one's really fucked up.
Yeah.
But in a more visceral, gory sense. Whereas, I think the name, let me see. Kurosagi Corpse Delivery Service is the name of the manga I'm talking about. And to me, maybe because I haven't gotten too deep into the Fable, but it's only a matter of time with the manga getting in deeper, is the black humor. And the nonchalance of realism is very much grounded in reality. And I don't know if the risque versions, the elements of it, they play it off as a matter-of-fact, everyday underworld life. But it's kind of like, it's so unbiased. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like,
I mean, what I'm trying to say is, the Fable is absolutely excellent.
So it's a 10 out of 10?
It's a 9 at the moment, just because I haven't finished it yet. I'm only halfway through all the volumes. Remember, there's 22 volumes. I'm only on volume 9, so it's going to be a while before I finish them all. But
it's already a 9 out of 10
The fact that I read 9 volumes over the last 2 days, like, okay, like it's at the bare minimum a 9 out of 10. And I think the scores on my anime list for the manga
reflects that. Yeah. So, sorry, the thing that before I bolted out to get delivery, what I wanted to say was with Orb, and with the Fable, it's very easy for me to predict what will happen, which is the Fable anime adaptation is going to suck, and it's going
or it's just not going to perform well. It might not be like terrible, but I honestly feel it's got like My Home Hero-esque stats written all over it.
Yeah, especially when you look at the same studio that is behind it, right? But with Orb, I can confidently say that it will do good. And I think it's a sad state of affairs when I'm sure of it.
I mean, like, Tezuka can pull the rabbit out of the hat and, like, completely surprise us. We cannot predict that. But it's safer to assume that they're not going to be as risky with their adaptation as we hope for them to be.
I wanted to tell you that because here's the thing, Will, that actually you can enlighten me on. The first thing is they're doing a double continuous cur, yep, which is, like,
all at once on Disney Plus as well.
What was the last two words?
Yeah.
Disney Plus. I'm worried about that. To be fair. Summertime Render is pretty fucked up too, so I don't know.
There are also some like really fucked up live action series on Disney Plus as well. So, hey, you never know, man.
Hey, we also gave a shout out to whoever is deciding what project.
Heavenly Delusions is also on Disney Plus.
Is it?
Yeah. Heavenly Delusions and
Summertime Render, yeah. Right? So we gave special shout outs, I think, at our last GAP award to whoever is deciding what projects to take. I can say for a fucking fact, whoever you are, you're doing the Lord's work. You're literally 3 for 3. Whether it's a production successful or not, you pick good projects, bro.
And lady. And the hope is that they make it a hat trick, make it 3 out of 3 with the Fable, but
listen, you better get paid, whoever you are, because you're really good at your job.
So that wraps up the ASAP 5. We're going to be giving our final thoughts at the end of this after Jason runs the show notes. But just as a reminder, we've gone over Orb, On the Movements of the Earth, Windbreaker, Quality Assurance in Another World, and The Fable. I think that, safe to say, both Jason and I are the safest in our positive predictions for Orb. Somewhat for Quality Assurance in Another World, we can kind of get an idea of how mid or how poorly Windbreaker is going to perform.
It will do fine. That's it.
Maybe not poorly.
It's just fine.
Yeah. And then with the Fable, it's hard to say like where it will be, just because there's a Disney Plus angle, there's the double cur angle.
Hey, we got Disney Plus.
Yeah.
We're gonna find out for sure.
Yeah.
And hopefully it would be the thing of, oh, I watched all double curves with Jason in the middle of the fucking night because we want to binge it, or we couldn't even make it through like 2 episodes. But we'll give you the answer when we find out. Okay. And just to reiterate, Quality Assurance is coming out in July, summer 2024. Windbreaker is coming out April for spring 2024. The Orb technically does not have a confirmed release date other than claiming 2024, so our prediction is it will be in the fall. And the Fable is coming apparently everything and all at once for April 6th, 2024. And that wraps up our episode 80 for our ASAP. I am trying to hold my breath and try to say all of this housekeeping script in one go. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Good Anime Podcast. You can always leave a review for us. It really helps us out. We're also on YouTube. It would be great if you could shout us out there as well. If you want to contact us, you can reach our email, gapallette@gmail.com, GAPALETTE, all lowercase, all one word, using the handle @palettegood, capital P and capital G, all one word. We have a Discord server and a bunch of other social media platforms. Links are in the description. Website, we have that too. www.goodanimepalette.com, all lowercase, all one word. Music credits for this episode. Our intro music is Flow To It by Typa. Our break music is Laser Drops by Hip Color. And our outro music is 2011 by Rocket Jr. You can support the music artists that we feature by listening to them on Spotify, Apple Music, or your music listening platform of choice. And Epidemic Sound provides all of our royalty-free music. If you're interested, you can sign up using the referral link in our show description. Terms and conditions apply.
This was a very good selection for ASAP 5. I mean, all the selections have been great. And for the most part, the stuff that we've recommended for ASAPs, whether it's 1, 2, 3, 4, or now 5, have tended to do pretty well. I think that...
I mean, there's to the point where we're doing 2 ASAPs now per season.
Because just the fact that, like, the mangas are great. We like reading the mangas. It seems that the listeners enjoy listening to this episode because they're usually the most listened to, most downloaded. So we're trying to ramp up as much, you know, ASAP content. We're not going to go full blown and say that we're going to do a lot more manga content, but you know, that's also to be decided. You know?
Yeah, and we don't want to, you know, oversaturate it with just all anime adaptations, primers, and all that stuff, right? So, but we wanted to have a bit more for each podcast season. Whew, okay.
Well, so, I think we'll leave that. That any final thoughts on your side in terms of what we've talked about today?
It really benefits everyone, whether they watch the Orb or the Fable, to read the manga, in my opinion. I think with the Fable in particular, you should definitely read it, even if you don't like the anime. Because I think, personally speaking, and again, I'm not necessarily throwing shade at Tezuka Productions. They're probably trying the best that they can with what they've got, with the timeline that they've had.
It's just that the limitations that they have to work under are very limiting.
And furthermore, seinens are hard.
Yeah.
Demographically speaking, it's less interesting for the general audience than shonens, because that's an obvious thing. It's hard. It's a tough road. So regardless, my hat's off to you. When the anime comes out, Will and I will give you our unfiltered thoughts. And unfortunately, I currently am not optimistic about it in terms of how I feel about it.
Fable, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But the manga, though, probably more so than any other series that we have mentioned for ASAP, I would probably be the strongest, even more so than Fieren. It'd be like the manga is 100% golden.
It's so good. I'll stop like simping over it because you've already heard enough. But
I mean, we simped over a lot of Orb and the Fable, and I honestly think it deserves it.
Secretly, I also really like Quality Assurance and In the World. I'm on chapter. We're both on like volume 5.
I'm like four or five. Yeah, but that's why we're trying to shout out them too.
So that's the end of today's episode. Thank you very much for listening to today's edition of the Anime Series Adaptation Primer episode. We are going to be going on a little bit of a break, and then hopefully we'll have more content on the upcoming ASAP 6. We haven't really decided what we're going to read for those ones yet, but rest assured...
There's a short list.
Given our track record of stuff we've been reading, I am not hesitant at all to say... It's going to be another banger. So with that, we'll leave you be. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll catch you all very, very soon.
Peace.